My guest today is the recently appointed city manager of the city of Pullman. He brings nearly 30 years of experience in municipal management and 24 years as a professional engineer. He's starting what will likely be one of the most influential jobs in our community, touching every business, road, and drain pipe in the city. And he's a major part of the cultural transformation that we're going through right now of getting to yes. Sean Wells.
Hey.
Thank you so much for joining me
today. Thanks for having me.
So the name of the show is All Roads Lead to Pullman because I believe that our community is so unique. No one's here by accident.
Right.
No one drifts through. No one just wanders into Pullman. Everyone chose to be here, whether it's to start a job, get a degree, you know, something positive in their life brought them to Pullman.
Sure.
And you've had a long career in city management, but I'm curious, what made you want to come to Pullman and pursue a career here?
You know, it's interesting. I went to college here in the 90s, got a degree in civil engineering, and left Pullman and kind of was like, okay, that was fun, but I want to be here for a long time. Did most of my career on the west side in the Puget Sound area. Met my current wife, and she's an alumni as well, and actually went grew up in the area in St. John Endicott area.
Oh, really? So your wife is from like Eastern Washington?
She's from Eastern Washington.
School here.
I went to school here. She went to school here.
But we were not. Graduate?
I graduated in 96.
Nice. Okay. So we missed each other by a few years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go yeah. Cougs. So she's go Cougs. She's the daughter of a wheat farmer and met her in the Puget Sound area. And then we started coming back here, got season tickets for football games and just kind of started coming back. She's got a lot of family in the area still. So we found ourselves coming back over this way. And as we were thinking about the rest of our careers and where we wanted to be after retirement, which is a ways out still, but still thinking that way, why not here? And then when Pullman opened the public works director position, kind of as a joke, I sent it to my wife and said, hey, what do you think? And she's like, you have to apply for that. So, I did. And I wound up getting that job. And I've been here since 2023 in that position.
You found your way back home.
Found my way back home. And we love it, you know, so now we have season tickets for football, basketball, women's basketball, volleyball. We hit all the athletic stuff there too, kind of dove in head first, if you will.
Impressive. And the Cougar Athletic Fund?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Very good.
Absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. So even before you made the move out here, you felt a draw.
We were already coming.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, we were already coming back.
So what was it? Like, what was about this place, or were you trying to get out of the west side?
No, the west side was great. And I loved working there. My last job before I came to Pullman was with the city of Bellevue. And I loved that spot. There was so much to do, so many activities, shows, restaurants, and the vibe there was good. I didn't like the over 1 hour commute that I had in about an 18 mile period.
That just drains you.
So now I got here, it does. And 3 hours a day in the car kind of thing.
Right.
It just takes away your life. And so the draw for me was I can walk to work. I'm a mile away, and it might take me 4 minutes if I drive.
There you go.
So
you traded rush hour for rush minute.
Exactly. and three stop signs.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, getting 3 hours a day back in your life really was kind of the draw for me. My wife works from home, so she can work pretty much anywhere. And it became a quality of life thing, honestly.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, but it's one thing to come and visit the Palouse and go to a football game. It's another thing to be right in like the inner workings of fixing the potholes. And
yeah.
Like what was about the job that attracted you?
You know, I think it was the variety. My previous positions, I was only working with development review. So handling permitting, customer service for, you know, people trying to get building permits or in my world, utilities, water, sewer, drainage, streets. But the component of that. And when I came to Pullman, it was going to be not just that, but it was all aspects of operations, maintenance. The new things for me were fleet management, so all the city vehicles, maintenance of those.
Bus system
and the transit. And that was huge, too. I don't know anything about running a transit system, but I don't have to. I know people. And then the wastewater treatment plant. Those were kind of the three new elements to me. And that,
okay,
for me, was really exciting to be able to kind of step into that and learn about those as well, yeah, as be directly responsible. And,
well, as a civil engineer, you probably have some experience in like stormwater and
absolutely
that sort of thing.
Yeah, stormwater was actually my specialty in Western Washington.
Oh, no way. They have more of it over there.
There's a little bit more, yeah. the rain and the water and everything else, it becomes like the predominant utility, yeah, almost secondary to water and sewer. But yeah, so that part of it was part of my experience coming here.
Yeah, I love civil engineering. some people might know, I have a little bit of a hobby with that.
Sure.
And most of my family are some sort of civil engineer. What is it about that field that got you excited to be a PE?
You know, I graduated from WSU and I thought my emphasis was going to be structural concrete. I went into a focus of thinking that I was going to be bridges, buildings, pavements, runways. It was about the time when permeable pavement started coming into play.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there's some researchers up at WSU.
Absolutely.
A lot of work with permeable pavement.
Absolutely. So I came out of college thinking that's where I was going to go, is structural concrete. My first job out of college was with a heavy civil marine contractor at the Port of Everett. They were building a wharf next to one of the piers. And so I got to see heavy concrete piles being driven and deck caps and all of that. And got laid off from that position about 6 months. The job was winding down, and then went into municipal work. And so the municipal side of it got me going into, you know, underground utilities, pipes, water, sewer, which was not my specialty in college, but slowly became part of that. I kind of gravitated towards the transportation side of things with roads, sidewalks, and such. But the PE element and the reason I wanted to go more of that route was career-oriented. I realized that if I wanted to do more in engineering, that was the path. To go and be a professional engineer and get that license, that credential, was going to take my career into different heights.
Yeah. What gets you excited to get up in the morning? What makes you excited to do the work of an engineer and now a city manager?
You know, a city administrator is technically the term.
That's the title. Okay, got it.
So
write that down.
Yeah.
City administrator.
Okay. It's it's a nuance in how the state laws pertain to a council manager form of government or a strong mayor form of government.
Got it.
But anyway, what
gets detail oriented?
Detail oriented. There you go.
All right, good.
But what gets me going in the morning, honestly, right now it's the people. It's the excitement thing of coming to work, dealing with different problems, solving those, interacting with the public, the customer service element of that as well. Most of my career, like I said, has been permit management. How do we get somebody through the system, that maze of city code and regulations, to the light at the end of that tunnel? How do we get them to that yes? And that's been my career, is how do we navigate that? I enjoy that. I enjoy trying to solve others' problems, and
from the very simple to the very complex.
Very complex sometimes too.
I think you and I don't remember when we first met, but my first memory of us interacting was with the downtown project.
Yeah,
where we all kind of thrust in a room, you know, Apollo Construction, Welsh Comer, the mayor, the other city officials, and me in the corner. The communications guy with my little laptop trying to take notes. And man, every single week there was a new problem to solve.
Yeah.
Sometimes every day there was a new problem to solve. Yeah. Some of them with months long decision paths, other things that could be solved same day.
Yeah.
But getting to see you in the public works director function with downtown, that was impressive.
Yeah.
I look back at that and I'm really proud of the work that got done, but I'm kind of curious from a engineering perspective and just a community relations perspective, when you look back at that, what do you feel like we did really well with the downtown project? And what do you feel like, maybe we could have done better?
I think we did really good at the construction overall.
You're not worried about sinkholes or anything like that?
No, no. the finished product out there looks amazing. And it's we know that we put the community on track for another 75 to 100 years of solid infrastructure. We built something that the next, three, four, five generations will walk on, drive on, and use. The underground utilities is the crux or the start of that whole project. And so we got the federal funding. I think we were very good at acquiring funding for that project that predated my tenure here.
We didn't have to raise taxes and didn't have to take out any loans.
Yeah, exactly. We got over $12 million project done. And it cost the city, $1.5 million or something to that effect.
Out of reserves.
So I think the city, we were very fiscally responsible in putting that project out. We also made a conscious decision to not use de-icing salts the very first year of the concrete, because the de-icing salts will erode concrete. That's the concrete background in me. So I made a point to work with my maintenance teams or the city's maintenance teams out there to say, hey, no road salt the first year. Let's just use the gravel. Let's work with educating the community on using a different type of product. If you're one of the business owners out there, use this other type of product and not just commercial de-icing salts. So, you know, setting that up so that we had the ability to preserve what we just installed, because that was very new concrete.
Yeah.
And we finished that up, you know, October, November-ish, when we were putting the last bound of it in. And it's like, we got to let that have time to cure. I think we did really well working with the contractor as well.
Yeah. I was super impressed with Apollo Construction.
Yeah.
They were on top of things. And I especially appreciated the proactiveness with downtown businesses.
Yeah.
You know, those of us at Welsh Coleman, we did our best to try and keep the community in the loop. But, you know, Tom from Apollo, he was knocking on every door.
Every day. Yeah.
Hey, we're doing this in front of your storefront. Hey, we're going to got to close down your sidewalk for an hour, but then we'll get you back open.
Yep.
Oh, you have a special event? Okay, we'll move construction to accommodate. Like, they were just so on top.
They were really good, really easy to work with. You know, if we found a problem, we were working with their inspector, Tom, or some of the other staff there. It was just the communication was phenomenal and quite honestly unheard of.
Yeah. And you feel like the city connection with that, like that relationship was strong?
We did. Yeah. And then our connection with Welsh Coleman to help manage that as well. That three-party relationship that we had really worked out.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, what do you think we could have done a little better?
Hindsight's always 2020.
Yeah.
Right? We can always go back and say, gosh, if we'd done this better, if we'd done this differently. I think that some of the things that the city could have done better, the contractor could have done better, honestly, was acknowledging the business's concerns earlier on.
Sure.
And being able to address some of those so that their concerns, they knew what they were going into. I think we maybe managed that a little too late in the process. We had some businesses that were like, okay, you're going to shut down my front door and we're not going to have sidewalks. No, we are going to have sidewalks. The only time your door is going to be shut is maybe, you know, 4, 5, 6 days when we do the concrete right out front. But coordinating with them earlier on, how do you use your rear service entrance? Is there a back door we can use there? Some of those businesses didn't have that, but most did. And so we were able to do that, but I think we could have done that and overly communicated it better to them and worked with them throughout that process.
That was definitely a lesson learned.
Yeah.
I can imagine the next time a project like this happens, we'll take that experience and roll it forward.
Yeah,
absolutely. But I mean, some of those businesses, they went through it.
Yeah.
You know, COVID and the downtown project back to back, that was a lot.
It was a lot
to absorb.
It was a lot. And we acknowledge that. But I think we got a extremely amazing product out there.
Yeah.
To the point where everybody wants to use the plaza spaces now. They want to be able to. We had our first Lentil Festival parade where we shut that down.
Yeah, even in the rain.
Even in the rain. Yeah, I was there too. But, you know, the ability to show off the downtown in that massive format like that. We've had other events down there as well that have been phenomenal. And they've just been fun to be a part of, fun to help those organizers administer them as well.
Yeah. This in your time as public works director, and especially with that capstone project, downtown project, what are some things that you learned either personally or professionally along the way? Like, do you feel like you're a different person now having gone through that experience?
It was in a time when I came to the city as the public works director, not knowing exactly all the history or the players. And so there's a lot of people that had a stake in that project. I didn't know anybody coming in other than my boss at the time and some other people and staff. And so for me, it was a steep learning curve as to see who's had a stake in this, what has already been done, learning a project when I came in, we were just coming off of the first bid cycle when we didn't get any bids. And how come, why not? You know, so I'm coming in asking a lot of questions. My learning curve there was all of that.
Yeah, that was definitely a momentum buster.
Right.
Like, hey, we think we can squeeze this in the summer.
Yeah.
And then, like, no takers.
Right. You know, the expectation.
That was a punch to the gut.
It really was. And so we had to come back, regroup, analyze that, and go, you know, we need more time. The contractors that we thought would bid, we talked to them, and they all said, we need more time. And we had unrealistic expectations of trying to squeeze that into this much time with this much budget.
How did we end up with that? Like, were there people on staff who were just overly optimistic, or like, were there engineers who said, no, you actually can get this done?
It was a little both. You know, we listened to the community when they said, we don't want you to close before graduation. We want to be open before school starts. And we want to be open this 1 week here for Lentil Festival, and we have to have a one lane of road. And it was too many exceptions that I think the staff and the community had of the project. And the contractors just kind of came back and said that we can't do it for that cost. You want it done, and we have to throw all of our resources. It was a very big project for kind of local contractors as well,
yeah,
which we saw when we redid it. We got a larger contractor out of the area.
Yeah. A comment that I got repeatedly online was, well, why don't you just split it up into two summers? You'll probably save money, and then we can just keep it during the summer months.
Yeah, that would have cost us more, actually.
Yeah.
We would have had to mobilize a contractor twice.
Right, because you have to do everything twice.
Right, yeah. And then you have to button it up again, and then there's this temporary nature of, is the road done or not for the entire next year?
Sure.
Until you get to that next construction season. And we felt that by doing so, that would have actually cost the city and the taxpayers more money to do that.
Yeah.
We also had a deadline on the federal funding that we had to have it done and expended by a certain time as well. So
yeah,
timing and expenses.
No, it was tricky.
Correct.
It was tricky, and definitely we learned a lot.
We learned a lot.
I know I learned a lot about.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of the biggest contracts and the biggest projects the city's done, and obviously the most visible.
Is there anything that really compares in size in terms of like a city expenditure in 1 year? Like
some of the
improvements?
Some of the water tanks. Like we built a new water tank up on College Hill.
Okay.
And that was right around the same cost values.
Yeah. 10 to 12 million.
Okay. So we do have big projects like that that come into play as far as dollar values go. When you get into the wastewater.
Nothing that disruptive. Yeah.
Yeah, you get into the wastewater treatment plant, very specialized equipment out there, and that can be very expensive.
Yeah.
So
I'm almost afraid to ask. I hate to put you on the spot like
That's
this,
okay.
Knowing that this is not in any way binding, but Grand Avenue is going to need similar treatment someday.
Yeah.
Not tomorrow. Probably not next year, but someday we're going to need to do a similar infrastructure dig and surface beautification.
Sure.
On Grand. When that day comes, whenever that is in the future, how will things be different in the way the city approaches the project?
You know, that's a great question that I don't maybe have all the answers to.
I wouldn't expect to have all the answers.
Grand Avenue is an interesting deal. Another state route. But the interesting nuance is, you know, there's a underground tunnel there,
yeah,
that goes from
tunnel, culvert,
tunnel,
covered ditch.
Yeah,
everywhere
it takes Dry Creek from the south end of town all the way just past the library to the old WashDOT rail trust.
Yep. Daylight in a couple spots there.
Yep. And built in the early 20s.
Wow. So it's 100 years old.
It is. And concrete inside of there that I don't know if I trust or not, but it's there and it's strong. In areas where there might be power running through it,
sure,
other utilities that have been over years, how do you get a pipe through this? So you just put the pipe through it.
So that's going to be a complex thing to untank.
That's going to be very complex. Nobody wants to see an open concrete ditch, if you will, so that the time they covered it and made a sidewalk on top of it. That's going to be a challenge.
Most people are probably not even aware that there's essentially a river under Grand Avenue.
Right. And it crosses Main Street.
Yeah.
So we had to deal with that during the Main Street construction too. And so there's going to be challenges on the north end. Most of that north side is concrete pavement, and that's going to be different. There's a couple of bridges there as well that we have to do some floodplain management to
right.
deal with. I've been in very preliminary discussions with the Department of Transportation. They've got some very infant project scoping to get from North City Limits to South City Limits to do a complete streets project.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
it would have to be phased, I would assume. And,
yeah. It's years or decades away, but at least someone's talking about it.
Correct.
Okay, that's good.
It's the initial stages so that the state can at least approach the legislature and look at funding sources. But it's getting something on paper right now, and whatever that looks like, we don't know timing, we don't know cost, we don't know
right.
scope.
Well, there's funding, there's the engineering. The people of the community are going to want to know, how is this going to be different in terms of relationship with the residents?
Yeah. And I think the lessons we learned from Main Street and the Net Project Downtown are going to come into play with that. It's going to be a lot of coordination with businesses, particularly in that downtown core, which are right up to that right away.
Right.
And some of those buildings are actually integral to that underground tunnel that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. They were just how it was done back then. And so we may have to untangle some of that will be very complex.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a lot of communication. We've got to overly communicate better to make that happen with particularly those directly impacted businesses and property owners.
For sure. And to be clear, this is not about around the corner.
This is not tomorrow.
We're not announcing anything.
This is not in the next 5 years, not in the next 10 years type of thing. Yeah. This is a long-term thing, but we have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
It takes that long sometimes.
Well, one thing that is being discussed around the community right now, all over social media, is bypass, bypass, bypass. Mm-hmm. We know that RTPO came out with their recommendations for a truck detour, which I came on this channel and clarified to everyone, truck route is different than bypass.
Yes.
but it's in the air right now. People are asking about that. And people keep wondering about the mythical northern bypass. Does it exist? Is it going to happen anytime soon?
Right.
Any insight on that? Like, can we expect bulldozers out in the field putting in a new arterial in the next little
bit? Just like I said, it's not 5 or 10 years. It's longer out. Whitman County and the City of Pullman are currently working with the Department of Transportation, the old SR-276 right-of-way that was acquired years and years ago. We're in a process right now.
276, that's like north of town, up by like the Schweitzer campus.
Correct.
Yeah.
We take it there. There's an area, it's called Magpie Forest, I think. It kind of goes next to that.
Yeah, and then to the west, it skirts right by Kamiak Elementary.
Correct.
Yeah.
And heads over towards 195, but on the east end, it would take down towards Airport Road.
Yeah.
And
I think originally it cut through the airport property.
It did. And we had...
Before the runway was built.
Correct. The airport and that project worked with the Department of Transportation to vacate that right-of-way that would take it all the way down to the Moscow-Pullman Highway.
Yeah.
So that they could do the runway expansions. So this would take it more towards Terraview side of the house, right before or north of the Airport Road.
Yeah. And does that corridor still exist?
The corridor is there. WashDOT still controls it. It's still...
So the City of Pullman doesn't own that land?
Not yet. Okay. And so that's where we're working with Whitman County and Pullman are working with WashDOT to transfer that right-of-way into the city and the county's ownerships. Once we get that, we can... And we've done a study that shows that there could be a road there, built there. A very expensive road. but that would be years and years out. And so as we... worked with the Palouse RTPO on defining alternates to freight and mobility and truck routes. That was one of the routes that was initially looked at, but
yeah, I was in those meetings.
You were in,
and I remember that being discussed, and yep. It was almost immediately discarded for this phase.
Correct.
Simply because of the cost criteria,
cost and timing.
Yeah.
And
RTPO wanted something that could be done immediately.
Immediately meaning in the next 5 to 10 years. Yeah. And short-term type of things. And so the truck route study that was just completed really was looking at opportunities for several different alignments.
Yeah.
That was a package deal. It wasn't just right. One silver bullet thing like you mentioned in your video.
Yeah. Not one route that solves everything.
Correct.
But do these three things, and that will alleviate some, not all, the truck traffic in downtown.
Correct. And so what people have called the Southern Bypass or the Southern Truck Route is really just one component of that. It's the biggest component of it. But there were also improvements that needed to be done on Bishop Boulevard,
yep.
The intersection at Main Street, the intersection at Grand, and some things along the way in there that would be, you know, more Pullman specific. There was a northern component of that too that went through Albion,
yep.
And came down through Pullman as well. Mm-hmm. And so there were little bits here, little bits there that all needed to be pieced together, and there were those components were all divided up into what are near-term solutions that could happen that were fairly low cost that could be programmed into capital programs, mid-term and then very longer term too.
Okay.
And what's happening now is Whitman County and the City of Moscow are kind of partnering on going forward with looking for grant opportunities just to see if they can get funding to make this happen.
Yeah.
And so that's what's happening now.
It sounds like the truck route stuff is more short-term. A northern new arterial, people call it a bypass.
Yeah.
Properly, it'd be an arterial that's a decade away or more?
That's at least.
At least.
I mean, that it'd be longer than that. There's a lot of environmental concerns you could do.
Oh, yeah. The studies would take a long time. Yeah. Seems like you could get the road in Pullman done relatively quickly, but to actually be a ring route to get out to the highway, that's going to take a bridge.
There'll be a couple, I'm guessing.
I mean, that's going to be 3/4 of the cost right there.
Yeah. A lot of that funding was...
So not going to happen quickly.
No.
But it's still on the radar. Still a possibility.
Still a possibility. Still kind of in that.
Hasn't been eliminated.
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
I saw one rumor that the land is in the process of being slipped through various channels in order to sell it off to private equity so the robber barons of Pullman can profit on the land.
I had not heard that.
Somebody wrote it. I'm not going to say who, but yeah. Okay. So there's no conspiracy with that right of way.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, good. You know, as we look at our community and our unique place in Eastern Washington, you know, we are a college town, of which there are many.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of college towns with our ratios, student to resident.
Yeah.
You know, our location, not being close to a freeway, not being close to a major, you know, traffic center or metro area. And just looking at the level of research and education that happens in our community compared to the size of town, we're pretty unique demographic-wise. But I'm sure that that brings some unique challenges when it comes to running a city staff and a city government. What's unique about, what are the unique challenges of running the city in Pullman?
Some of it, I think, is we don't get property taxes on university land. So the state's properties that they own, there's no property taxes that come back to the city and the local government.
Sure. So you think of like the four hills of Pullman.
Right.
One of those hills pays almost no property taxes.
Correct.
Not so, counting like the apartments and all that, but like the university itself is just there.
Correct.
Huh.
And so it winds up being like a small city within a city. WSU has their own water system, their own drainage system, their own sewer collection. They do discharge their sewer to our system for treatment at the treatment plant, and they pay a little bit of that cost for that. But their own well system and their own drainage system. Hmm. So they kind of operate autonomously like that.
Their own police force.
Their own police force. Years ago, the fire departments merged. I remember that. And so, but we then have to also provide fire service to the campus.
Interesting. Because they used to have, because we have two fire stations in town. And then there was a third fire station that was run by the university, but they shut it down.
Correct.
And we just absorbed that.
We took the staff and the equipment, and yes, that was well before my time here.
Yeah.
So in essence,
our facilities for fire actually shrunk. We used to have three fire stations. Now we have two.
The community had three, and now there's two.
Oh, boy. But not necessarily the resources to build a third one.
Not yet.
Okay.
So we've got some things in play for a location for a third station. And not anything that's been solidified yet.
Okay, but it's being worked on.
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. So the city within a city, that definitely skews the numbers.
It can. You know? And then, so then the seasonality of 3 to 4 months of the year, there's, 60% of the population in town is gone. And so that changes business models for businesses. They have to accommodate, you know, a year's worth of profit and revenue and everything in a 9-month period.
Right.
And then slow way down during the summer months.
Sure. Which explains why we both don't have enough hotel rooms and have too many hotels.
Yeah.
Right. Like what are all the, you know, some of these buildings are vacant most of the year.
Yeah.
And then for about 6 or 8 weekends a year, everything's booked.
Everything's busy.
Within 90 miles.
Yeah. Basically. Yes, that's true.
How does that affect things like tax revenue? Because I was looking online, and you know, Moscow, which is significantly smaller than Pullman, actually has a much larger city budget. I think it's around $130 million municipal budget per year in Moscow, whereas Pullman's like...
What's that, 100?
Yeah, 90, 100, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't speak to Moscow because I haven't studied theirs, but I know that it can be a challenge because we're not only trying to provide services for... police, fire. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is a challenge, we do have a full-time fire force, you know, they're full-time staff versus a volunteer staff.
That's true.
Our police force is well-trained and,
well-equipped.
And we want to make sure of that. We also have, you know, all the, and I'm not trying to compare us to Pullman at all, but you know, We have to pay for public works. We have to pay for administration.
Compare us to Moscow.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not comparing us to them because they have all of that as well. But yeah, I mean, there's some challenges there with the revenue streams that can be tough. We have state limits on property tax increases that were put into play years and years ago that we're living with the ramifications of now. And inflation has outpaced that. So we're running into situations where we don't have, you know, revenue streams to accommodate all of the things that we want to put into play, all the services that we provide.
Gosh. So like with a small business, you know, your revenue needs to keep up with expenses.
Right.
Is that happening with city?
No, our revenues are not keeping up with expenses. And that's the thing. We've always been told to do more with less, you know, that kind of old adage there. And yeah. We're kind of running into that bubble of now what? So there's going to be some, I think, challenging discussions, some courageous conversations that will need to be had in the coming months, particularly around the city budget and city finances.
That's tough because, you know, we're used to a certain standard.
Yeah.
Here on the Palouse, you know, like if you subtract the student population, we're really a community of 15,000.
Right.
Right. Or maybe even less than that.
Right.
And there's not a lot of towns of 15,000 that have a robust transit system.
Right.
Or such a great network of parks and trails.
Yeah.
Right.
Or a library. Or
library. Our library is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, the great staff down there. Parks and Rec. I mean, all my kids are involved in Parks and Rec sports.
Yes.
And the team that runs it, they're fantastic.
They're great.
You know, we interact with them often. My wife's on the PYBA board for baseball.
Okay.
You know, dealing with stuff at the city play fields, and the Parks and Rec staff are amazing. Right. You don't really get that typically in a town of 15,000.
Right.
But here we are. Yeah. So we're a small town that's used to having nice things.
Yeah.
And it's tricky when the numbers don't go in your favor.
It is. It is. And there's a lot of community expectations to have that. Mm-hmm. And when we get into situations where we have to make tough decisions, it's nobody likes that. Nobody wins.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're looking forward and not looking forward.
Well, it sounds like you signed up for an unenviable job, right? Like there's been some difficult things in the last little bit,
yeah.
Right? We've gone through some transitions, but also with looming budget issues, I just got to ask, why did you throw your hat in the ring for this? Why did you want to even be the administrator of the city of Pullman?
You know, it was an unfortunate situation and how it came to be in the position was open. And I don't need to get into the history on that, but it wasn't anything that I came to Pullman looking for. I came to Pullman to be a public works director, and the engineering side of me wanted that. And when the position became available, I looked at it and I said, you know, if not me, then who? I wanted to be able to continue that engagement with staff, that continuity of leadership there that I think staff needed. And I said, you know, let's put my name in the hat and see what happens and be good with the fact that if there was another candidate that was more qualified, I had to be okay with that because, well, that person would be my boss.
That's true.
So, but I had to be okay with that, honestly. And if I didn't try and if I didn't put my name in, then I would always wonder. Huh. And so I thought, let's do it. And, you know, I was a successful candidate and here I am. Now, why? I guess is the big question. Why would I want all of that heartache and trouble? And it's something new. Like I said, when I came to here as a public works director, it was something new. And it was, for me, the ability to be a public works director was for me to solidify my time and my desire, my commitment to the community. And I think the city administrator was even that as well, even more so. Is to get out there and be a part of the community, be actively engaged in all forms, not just the public works side of it.
Yeah.
The other part too was as an engineer, I kind of started out my career as an introvert, and over time I've slowly become more extroverted, which is a weird dynamic.
I think the job requires it.
And it requires it. It does. And so my nature is not really people skills, but I'm learning that very quickly.
Yeah.
And
well, how many employees do you have now?
Oh gosh. The city staff, there's I think about 300 or so plus
okay.
Part-time.
Yes. Yeah, I think you got to become an extrovert in a hurry.
Very much so. Well, and I learned that quickly coming in as a public works director. I was managing a team of 9 in Bellevue to 109 when I got here. And so then I had to get my face out, my name out, and meet and greet everybody I could and just learn a little bit about everybody.
Well, and that care for the staff is a part that I think is oftentimes lost on those of us who are just in the community.
Yeah.
Because we tend not to celebrate the wins. We tend to get frustrated by the failures.
Yeah.
And then take out our frustration on the municipal staff member who's just doing their best.
Right.
So how do you handle that as a leader? You know, you're caring for a staff of 300.
Yeah.
Who have, let's just be honest, kind of been through it the last year and a half.
Staff have, and in all forms, you know, the police department, the fire department, the whole city staff as well. There's a nature, I think, in me to know that people may not be frustrated with us personally. They may be frustrated with a situation.
Yeah.
And they're advocating for their position, much like a softball coach or a baseball coach advocating for their team. They're not mad at the umpire. They're mad at the situation. And so a lot of that is coming to work, that desire to be a public servant, to help the community, to assist others. It's instilled in all of us. And there's, I think, a way to bring that out with people that says, you know, it's okay. Sometimes we have bad days. We have a citizen that's very upset, irate, the water bill is too much money, or whatever the case is. And we do our best to alleviate that situation, you know, try to get what's out there, what that customer's trying to do. Sometimes they can't do, and we have to tell them, no, this can't be done that way. But how do we do that? How do we get them to that? Okay, yes, we can take care of that. We can fix this situation.
Yeah.
And some of that is just the empathy with your staff to understand their situations. I've been through those. I've been from the, you know, the front lines as an engineer one at the city of Issaquah, coming up dealing with challenging people that want to go, you know, take a tree down on their property, and the codes say you can't. So we have to work with that. But, you know, from that all the way to, you know, now we've got a community that I think is very engaged, and that can be good. It can also be very challenging too, because
we're a town of very smart people.
Very smart people.
Yeah. And sometimes that smartness can take us into some conspiracy minded places.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an educated town for sure.
But they challenge us. And that's what's good, is because I like it when the community is so engaged that it keeps staff engaged as well. You know,
I like that.
We have to be able to explain things simply, very complex things simply.
Yeah.
And be able to back that up, you know.
Yeah.
Staff does that. We've got very professional staff, trained, excellent police officers. The training the fire department does, down to, you know, people on the front line in the ditches that are getting trained on, you know, how to be safe in a ditch. Everybody's going through a lot of training, a lot of preparation, a lot of dealing with people. Whether you're out in the community, has an angry person driving by yelling at you because the road's closed, or all of that. And it can be wearing on staff, but knowing that you get up the next day and you go, yeah, let's do it again. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
And you're going to be rewarded with some of those people that come in and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe how nice downtown looks. That officer was so friendly to me. The event that you put on that we did just a couple weeks ago, the community table.
Oh, that was great.
Isn't that nice? Yeah. Things like
go and gather. That
right.
Was fun.
And the night of gathering was so good, and we got so many positive comments. And that's why you come back and you do it again and again and again, is because you're doing something for the community that is benefiting the community that you're living in.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I want to talk about those events, but, you know, to stay on the subject of staff, you know, it's been a crazy couple of years.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we, Mayor Johnson, Pullman legend.
Yeah.
Right. 20 years at the helm. Any transition away from that to any new mayor is going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
And just so happens that that transition happened right when we did the largest, most disruptive construction project since I don't know when.
Yeah.
Construction of Bishop. I don't know when we've had something this disruptive.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, right in the middle of it, we went through some really rough upper level staff changes.
Yeah.
You know, departures, some key people. How do you recover from that? How do you turn that around just morale-wise with the team?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, as you said, a changeover of mayor, city administrator, police chief, fire chief, very top key positions in the city. And that loss of continuity can be very tough on staff. Yeah. Like you alluded to, the morale of staff can be disappointed, hurt, in whatever the situations are. There's a lot of rebuilding, kind of almost a healing process that has to happen. And Mayor Benjamin and I have had several discussions about that, and that's one of the focuses that I'm on point for is how do we build staff back to a spot where they feel good about coming to Pullman, working. They don't sit in their car and dread coming into the office, you know, the 5 minutes before they open the doors. But they're excited. They want to come into work. And then when they leave work, they want to come back. So that's the excitement that I want to build. I want to build that pride, that kind of a swagger, if you will, like we're proud to work for Pullman and this is why. Almost kind of a, you know, be the brand. The shirt, when you put the shirt on every day, what do you feel? When you put the badge on as a police officer or fireman, what do you feel? What's that pride that you have when you wear that uniform? And, you know, when I put this logo on, I feel pride there too. I want to be a part of that, and I want to try to instill that and work with staff to build that culture.
Love that. Do you feel like things are trending in the right direction?
Well, it's 2.5 weeks into the job, so yes, I do.
I think the community is genuinely wondering. I mean, there it's been such a steady parade of difficulties.
Yeah,
people wonder. You know, people don't remember this kind of friction.
Yeah.
In years past, right? But also, as community members, we don't necessarily see what's going on behind the scenes,
right?
And we don't see the growing pains of a community that's transitioning from being a small town to a mid-sized city,
right?
Right. And so, you know, can you speak to that? Like, is this normal? Is this to be expected, or are things truly in crisis and we need to clean house?
We're not in crisis. We're not in any crisis. We've got amazing staff there. The mayor is a longtime community member, was obviously voted into the mayor's position by the community after Mayor Johnson left. And, you know, the community wants that continuity of somebody that knows the government system, and they clearly elected Mayor Benjamin to that. My desire and my commitment to the city was obviously seen, and they promoted me to city administrator for that. They didn't hire somebody else from outside of the city to do that. There was an appointment of Chief Brashears to the police chief, longtime police member here, and I think that there is a, in order to build that morale, to keep that going, the hires from within are essential to keep that continuity of people that understand the culture that's trying to be built here and that can have the respect of staff as well. Bringing somebody from the external can be good in certain circumstances. You need a new vision, a new idea. I think that's where my background can kind of play into that too. I've worked for numerous jurisdictions, and I can take the little bit of goodness from each one of those and bring that to the Pullman too and say, you know what, that didn't work for that city, but it could work here.
Yeah.
So
there's a real, it's difficult to know when an internal hire is a good old boy situation and when it's a pragmatic choice.
Right.
Right. You know, and I went back and forth on this one. You know, I was honestly kind of leaning more towards like, it'd be really great to get someone from out of town to get some fresh ideas for the city manager job. And I had no connection with the hiring process whatsoever. I wasn't even able to attend the sessions. But I really appreciate the continuity aspect of it.
Yeah.
Because let's just face it, a lot of people who are recruited to this region don't stick.
Right.
You know, WCU has a retention issue. SEL has a retention issue. You know, the adage is that you're either here for life or you're gone in 18 months.
Yeah.
Right.
You have to want to be here.
You have to want to be here, and you have to be a cultural fit.
Yeah.
And so the question, you know, with internal hire, we know we have the cultural fit. The question on a lot of people's minds is competency.
Yeah.
And so that's why I appreciate your background and just how many cities you've worked for, you know, almost 30 years of experience.
Yeah.
Building cities, I think we're in good hands.
Thank you.
And so I'm wanting that confidence to permeate through the whole organization of, you know, we can evolve past being a small town. We can become a mid-sized city and modernize this. So what can the community expect from the city government in the coming years? Like, I feel like we're at the start of a new era. What does this look like?
It is. There's, I think, a lot of new ideas, not just in city government, but in the community. And we've got a new director at the Chamber of Commerce with Pete. I like his vibe. His energy is going to be amazing for the city in that role. We've got a new president at the university, Dr. Cantwell there.
Who has made some very community-minded signals in terms of prioritizing the Pullman campus.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that there's kind of a trifecta, if you will, of what can we do to bring Pullman back to being a regional and national player here? And I like where that's going. You know, I think what's coming in the next couple of years is going to be a lot of that collaboration that has been there in the past, but, you know, to strengthen it even further.
Yeah.
And
well, I don't want to dwell on the past, but we all know there's been friction with people in the community, especially downtown, when it comes to interfacing with the government on getting, let's just say, small stuff done.
Anything,
permitting is a major point of contention. I heard we now have a digital system now for doing building permits.
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, that's been
crazy that's only happened in the 2020s, but okay, here we are.
It took us a while to get there. Yeah. But that's been huge. And the number of people that have to go to City Hall now to fill out a paper form and turn in paper plans.
Yeah.
The number of people have gone down precipitously.
Yeah.
And that's good because it then saves people that time, the effort. They can do this online. They can still come down and do all that too, but they don't have to.
Well, I know the perception in the community has been, and I'm speaking very broadly here, that, you know, the city's hard to work with. The team just wants to kind of do as little as possible, and they're not there to help me get to yes. They're not there to help me do my thing. They're just trying to throw sand in the gears.
Right.
You know, and whether or not that impression is true, we definitely want to move past that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, we want this new culture. So, you know, what are you doing to help us get to that point and help nudge the culture in a positive direction?
One of the things I've done is sometimes I think staff's instinct is to, oh, we can't do that. We've never done that before. We don't want to block the road off. We don't want to do this. We can't, whatever. And so some of the things I've challenged staff with is, okay, but if we had to say yes, what would the conditions be? If we had to allow that road to be closed, how would we do it? And then that gets staff kind of thinking about, oh, well, then I'd need a sign here. I'd need a road closed here. I'd need to put a police officer here, whatever that is. Okay, now we've got a path to yes. It may not be immediately yes. It's not a universal yes, but it's at least a path. We know what that path looks like. Rather than just a physical roadblock of no, we've now identified what are the challenges we have to do to get there. And then we can let the community or the permit applicant or whoever we're dealing with kind of make that decision of, okay, well, do I want to go there or do I not want to go there? But it's not the city saying no, it's the city saying yes, but here's how you have to do it.
You know, an example I think of is the Pine Street Bridge,
which
of course got displaced by flood water completely out of our control.
Yeah.
But when that happened, I could just feel the whole town go, oh no, not again.
Yeah.
It's going to take a year to put it back in place. It's, you know, and honestly, even after a month, we were already feeling like, what's taking so long?
Right.
What was the process there? Because I feel like it got done faster than we all thought, but it still took a while.
It did.
Like what was the process?
That was an interesting one because clearly the bridge had been sitting there for 20 years and had never done that before. So
like the water never come up so high as to actually move.
Never moved it off of its foundation. It did what it was designed to do, but not totally. We did find there was a small nuance in the design of the bridge that one abutment was longer than the other, so it never got a chance to pivot like it was designed to do.
Oh, interesting.
So
the water moved it, but it didn't like swing the way it was.
Correct. Going. Yeah, it couldn't. Physically, it kind of pinched itself in there.
Got jammed up.
Exactly. So we had to analyze, all right, now that it was down, we had to wait for the waters to get down a little bit so that we could get inspectors under it and around it to safely. So that took a month or two to do that. In the meantime, we were trying to figure out, all right, if we want to move it back, can we move it back? Is it physically, was it damaged? Can we do that? What about the abutments?
Or is it just firewood?
Is it just, do we build something new? Do we not do anything at all? But we had to kind of assess is it even feasible to do anything with? Once we were able to do that, then it was, okay, it looks like it's probably structurally safe. We could probably move it, but how? We could bring a crane in and pick it up and set it down. Could we do something? One of our building inspectors, actually the building official, said, have you thought about hiring a house mover? And we kind of looked and went, no.
Really? That idea came from just one of the staff members?
Came from a staff member.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we said, no. It was kind of, tell us more. So we engaged with Wasencary Construction and asked them to come out and take a look. And they were like, we think we can maybe do this.
No way. So like the jacking process for pulling a house above the foundation. That's what they did.
Yeah, they put lifted it up, little airbags. They built some cribbing and then airbags, lifted it up, set it down on these rails, and then kind of slid it back into place.
But, oh, that's so cool.
We did engage some crane contractors too to see that, yeah, they could probably do it too. But we put the bid out there very kind of in a generic form so that it was the ability for a house move or a contractor that did cranes, either one could bid on the project. And they did. We got the local contractor to make it happen. But in the middle of all that, we had to prepare for all of the permitting that had to happen. And now a lot of people are just like, well, just move it back. Just ask for forgiveness and not permission.
Yeah, like just call up Coach Jimmy. Let's get the whole offensive line out there. All right, everyone.
Everybody, it's weights day. We're just working on legs.
Exactly.
No, that, in fact, there was people that thought, well, can you maybe go up to Fairchild and have an airplane or a helicopter come and lift it up and put it down. And,
okay, that's crazy.
Yeah, we had some crazy ideas coming at us, but we had to make sure that we were in compliance with all the not just local but federal and state people and groups that have to do the permits. So we had to get it.
There's one thing: if you're a farmer out in Whitman County, you can probably ask forgiveness later.
Yeah,
if you're a city government.
We have to do it right, especially in some of these agencies where we're getting future funding. And if they see you're not playing well with them and doing things out of compliance, they won't get to boot your funding as well. So we wanted to at least hit those marks. So it took us time to get through those. A lot of those agencies were like, absolutely no problem. Fish and Wildlife, see what you're doing. Here's your exemption.
Yeah.
You don't need a permit. It's actually an exemption, but we have to get them to let us know that.
Yeah.
But once we got everything in play, it was go time. And we had a good, solid bid on it, and we got it moved.
Yeah.
And it was fun to watch, fun to be a part of.
I think the flood happened in, was it March or April?
It was February.
It was February.
Yeah.
Okay, and you guys had it in place before Lentil Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So
internally, we said, that's our target. We have to have that.
That's awesome.
Lentil Festival is this kind of soft target.
Yeah.
We really want to hit it, really, really, really want to hit it. And we were able to get it done like 3 or 4 weeks ahead of time.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have wins like that.
Yeah.
And be able to celebrate that.
Yeah,
I feel like that was a little bit of a sore spot with the community because it was so visual.
Yeah.
Right. You drive past and you see the crooked bridge and you're like, dang it, why can't we get our act together? And then way to go getting that done.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
It was good. It was fun. A good win for the community too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're in this new era now where we're wanting our downtown to get used more. We're wanting to encourage more events. And it just seems like something always comes up.
Yeah.
You know, just recently I was reading, I think on the comments on Facebook, the Starlight Market was trying to do something in Pine Street Plaza, and they ended up getting like nickel and dimed on like the power outlets. Like what went wrong there?
Yes.
That's not cool.
It was
like, why are we even charging that?
No. So what happened was when we finished the project downtown, we had a lot of the businesses that had sidewalk leases, and we converted those into right-of-way use permits. We had to kind of revamp that whole code. As part of that process, then the plazas are actually right-of-way. That was an old street that went through there in Pine Plaza. We wrote the code so that it was written to where the use of the property was covered under the permitting mechanism. And we have not yet, up till recently, had any requests in a obvious manner for electricity. Even though we permitted ones, say, the Music on Main, where are they pulling their power from?
Why wouldn't that just be included? Why isn't it a blanket?
Right, and it probably should have been. We didn't add that in the language of the code. It was an oversight.
Oh, so the paperwork just wasn't written properly.
Right. The ordinance that was put in.
So you weren't trying to exclude people from using power.
Right.
Trying to like upsell them.
No, not at all. It was just not included. And it was one of those things that as staff, when we were writing the code, we didn't think about it. And so.
I guess you don't know until it happens.
So as we were looking at it internally, we said, all right, well, we can't go forward with any permits until the code's changed, knowing that electricity is there. We can't give away that for free. It's like, if we had a contractor that wanted to use water on our job site, they would hire or they would rent a hydrant meter, and we would charge them for the consumption of the water.
Sure.
You don't,
just give away city water.
Right. And the same concept for city electricity.
Yeah. Even though we're probably talking about pennies here.
Right.
Yeah.
So we just needed to address it by saying, hey, electricity is or isn't included. Is it a la carte, not all events are going to need electricity. So do we charge a daily rate? I don't know. So we in as staff came out and said, all right, anything we'd issue new between now and we know we have to have the council amend that code to include that, whatever that looks like. Between now and then, let's just make it aware to those permit holders that or the permit applicants, the new ones, that we need to deal with the electricity issue. And that went out.
Did you have to deny electricity to the Starlight Market?
Well, that's what happened. Staff took that, and my intent didn't get conveyed properly to staff, and so they took it to them and said, "Oh, hey, you can't use electricity." And they said, "Wait a minute, we've been doing this for 3 or 4 months now."
Okay, so a little bit of a telephone game scenario.
Exactly, and so it was an oversight and a mistake and miscommunication. So we corrected that on Friday. I was down there, met the event organizers and some of the vendors, and said, "No, that was not our intent to disrupt the apple cart, if you will. not at all. Please plug in, because obviously the Starlight Market is kind of a nighttime event and you need the power, and it wasn't our intent to do that at all. But we do need to address the gap in the code.
Well, and it can seem silly when you're just looking at doing a small festival in Pine Street Plaza,
right?
But we're dealing with legal implications for a city where you have to honor what the code says,
right?
And so, like, if it's $100 permit to do something, I don't know what it costs, $100 permit to do an event in Pine Street Plaza, and electricity is included. Great. Okay. Well, I'm going to start up Adam's new pop-up crypto farm, where I'm going to bring a whole bunch of massive server racks and I'm going to just use all the free electricity.
Yeah.
Like, that may seem like an absurd edge case.
Yeah.
But in that scenario, the city would have to honor it if electricity was included for free.
Correct.
Right. And so, that makes sense. So what's the charge for electricity? I'm just curious.
We're working on that. We know what our electrical rate is per kilowatt hour, and we've started to figure out how much,
which is cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah, it's like, I think, 14 or 15 cents, whatever Vista charges us. And then we know, like, the breaker sizes, so we know how much, in theory, we could push power out of each outlet.
So as you roll that into the cost, we're not talking about a major upsell here.
No, not at all. Not at all. If you're thinking about it, it's going to be, 20 cents an hour. I don't even know the numbers yet. We've done some initial calculations and I don't recall what they are.
Right. But now I have to find somewhere else to put my crypto farm.
Right. Yep. Extension cords are not going to work.
Yeah. what do you want to happen with downtown? Like there is a perception out there that the city is not on the citizen's side when it comes to doing stuff, doing these kind of public events. And I hear a lot of comments about yet another regulation, yet another obstacle in our path.
Yeah. I think it's because it's new, too. The way that the council has formed the ordinances, the way that things are changing, Pullman's kind of growing, if you will, from that small town to a medium to big-sized town, and with that come growing pains. It's not like we're trying to throw anything in there, but we're trying to protect the city and the taxpayers from anything that goes wrong. We heard some things when we enacted the right-of-way use permit. Why do I need to have insurance? Oh, why wouldn't you want insurance, right? If something happens in that person's use of that right-of-way, they could be sued, the business owner, the city. And so we want to have that protection in place for the business owners and the city if something goes silly. And that's just one small avenue of that. We're trying to protect the investments that the city has put into the city, the business owners have for their own businesses, all of that. And so as these things change, we're trying to do it for the good. We're not trying to go out there and, set things up for the business owners. Nobody's in the back going, ooh, what can you do now? It's not happening. Nobody's doing that at all. We're literally trying to make sure that everybody's protected and covered, and that we're not in violation of any laws, any codes, the state constitution, things like that.
Well, and if this goes well, we want to see more events downtown,
exactly.
Not fewer.
Exactly. And so, in the perfect world, we've got a thriving downtown, which I think we're on the verge of that. I think we've got businesses that want to come in and be a part of that as well. You look at some of the specific businesses that have said, yes, I want to have sidewalk space out there. I want to put my restaurant space out there, or my storefront outside and use that. I mean, look at how beautiful that downtown was this summer with the flowers. The flower pots were amazing.
And love the flowers. Love the lights that were wrapped on the
floors. Lights were there as well. We've got amazing, I think there were over 2,700 individual plants that went in during the construction of downtown. And we saw that. Parks Department took great care of them. We had some business owners that came out and said, hey, can I help take care of like this one little planter out here?
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was good. And so what do I want to see out of downtown is clearly more use, the businesses that are there, I think, are the tip of the iceberg on that, and bringing people down there and creating a vibrant, thriving downtown. And not just downtown, but the rest of the city as well. You know, you have to think about, there's more to Pullman than just Main Street.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, the businesses that are on Bishop, and we want to see them in use too, and up and down Grand and Stadium Way and everything else. There's, you know, I hate to discourage the downtown people, but it's more than just downtown. It's the whole
city. Well, it's the whole community. And we are a town that hosts a lot of guests.
Yes.
And we want to host more guests.
Right.
And a significant portion of those guests are staying in what we are now calling short-term rentals.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, my goodness, that's probably going to be an issue going around for a while here.
Yeah.
I was surprised to learn that we have had rules about short-term rentals this entire time. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Turns out that all of my friends who have Airbnbs have been running them illegally the entire time. But I also heard a dear friend of mine who rents a house out on Sunnyside Hill said they started the process of licensing under the old system and gave up in frustration.
Okay.
And then started under the new rules and were super impressed at how quick it went.
Yeah.
It was like a day.
Yeah.
And like, boom, they were all set. And so I want the community to know, like, this isn't about shutting stuff down.
No.
We want more events downtown. We want more people staying in well-run Airbnbs.
Yeah. And we want them safe. And we want them managed effectively and efficiently. And the community needs that. The community needs more ability for people to come to downtown, come to the whole city with WSU events when we do have those all out. And, you know, the community development director, RJ Lott, just sent me a note this week. Just kind of randomly, he says, hey, we got two more STRs that were been approved and inspected and out the door. That's great. The feedback from him is that the building inspectors that have been going out there, we've usually have one that's going out, maybe two. But we're trying to make it just one person that's so that there's consistency with what's being asked. And they're coming back saying these inspections are taking 15 to 20 minutes at most. They're going in, they're saying, all right, do you have your smoke alarms, your carbon monoxide, your fire extinguisher, exit sign, not sign, I'm sorry, the exit map to tell people where to go, the emergency lighting. There's no signs, no, you don't have to put the lighted signs out there. But, and it's there, it's bang, bang, bang. And a lot of these owners and operators are coming back and saying, just like your friends, this has been great. It went so simple.
Awesome.
We've been able to turn some of these around in the same day.
Fantastic.
And they come in, they say, hey, we've got everything installed. And yeah, we can get you an inspection this afternoon, meet you out there at 2. We're done by 2:15.
Yeah.
So it's been actually very good for the community and getting them licensed, legal, and safe.
Yeah. Well, and I just want to continue to point people towards this new era of hospitality and customer service.
Yeah.
Right. You know, this is something that we all need to embrace, but it's something I hope we can expect from our city employees. You know, I had my occasional moments of friction.
Yeah.
When I first started working on the downtown project, one of my first assignments was to do a video about the parking plan.
Yeah.
And I have an old email where I emailed a staff member who I will not name who said, like, hey, can I see the draft of this? And that person, no joke, said, no, you'll see it when the public sees it. And if you want it sooner, do a FOIA request.
Oh.
I'm glad those days are behind us.
Yeah.
But what can we expect as community members? What should we expect when we interact with city staff?
I think you should expect kindness and respect, professionalism. We want to be there as the first point of contact rather than people going straight to a council member. Not to say the council member isn't a bad thing, because the community knows.
You get to know your city council members.
Know to get them. Yes, exactly. But know that, hey, if something is doesn't seem right, it's okay to call staff and say, what's going on here? Yeah. And engage with that and directly. The people want to understand. People want to at least have an explanation of why things are going one way or the other. And I think that's something that can be expected too, is if you're getting told no, ask why. And, you know, because the answer shouldn't be no, the answer should be yes with conditions kind of thing.
Yeah. Like a path to yes.
And if it is no, you need to be told why no. You know, there's you want to build a 60-story tower on your residential lot? No. Because why? Because the zoning says, darn it, Sean.
I know,
sorry. But, you know, there's certain reasons and regulations that have to come into play. Yeah. And sometimes the answer is no, but the community should be expected to at least get an explanation of why.
Yeah. And with this idea of a pathway to yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you can't put a 60-story building there, but if you had worked with the council to change the zoning.
Hey.
Maybe 20. Maybe there's a comp plan there. We could maybe get you to, yeah, right. Exactly.
Adam's crypto farm
right.
towers.
Right. There we go. You're going to need to look for the Vista for power.
I have to talk to Paul Kimmel about that. Well, as we wrap up, where do you see our community evolving in the next 5 years, the next 10 years, if we do this well? If we start pulling together in the same direction, kind of move past the pettiness of arguing about silly stuff and believing all the conspiracies.
Yeah.
If we can do this well, both as a city and as a community, what do you think Pullman looks like in 5 years, 10 years?
I was telling one of my staff members the other day that it, as I got here as a public works director, it felt like Pullman, everybody in the community wants Pullman to succeed. They want to move forward in some fashion. Everybody's coming at it from a different background, different perspective. And think of close your eyes and think of a big rock, a big boulder, and everybody's trying to push that boulder. Everybody's saying, I want the boulder to go this way. But everybody's standing around the boulder, pushing it in a different direction. And they all have the great intent. They're all saying, I want this boulder to move. But they're not realizing they're pushing against each other. And if we can get people on the same side of that boulder, we can push that rock and we can move it miles. And so that's where I see Pullman moving in the next 5 years and even in the next 10 years is the collective gathering of the chamber, the WSU, the city, SEL, all those players, the hospital. We all need to push Pullman from the same side of the rock and come together and move that rock forward.
Yeah. What are some tangible examples? How do you see Pullman improving and growing in the next decade?
You know, some of the tangible examples, I think... just a simple one. I mean, this is just one that was recent, was the city decided we wanted to come forward and bring a community event together in the community table.
Yeah.
And we got together and said, we can make this work. So we had some staff members that moved it together. We got table rentals. We put the chairs out there. We advertised and broadcast it. And we put it on. And that Saturday a couple weeks ago was a great event. Or Friday. It was a Friday night.
Was it a Friday night?
I think
I had a grand time. I don't remember what day.
No, it was Saturday. It was Saturday, actually.
Okay.
And we had a great time. We got the DJ was out there. People came around, and we had people wandering up saying, what's going on? And so it saw that the city itself can do something. And then we just recently met with some of the community members and said, hey, maybe this could be taken on by a joint force. Maybe we can move this kind of community vibe forward. And so, you know, that's just a small version of how we can start something and then move to get on the same side of the rock and push something forward. And it went well. That event was amazing. We had a lot of feedback, said it was great. But I think bigger things like that's just a small version, but I think we can work on bigger things like that too.
Yeah.
Better mechanisms to communicate things to the public. Joint ventures with all of those partners I mentioned that could be powerful. If we're all on the same side of that rock.
So finish the sentence. The future of Pullman is?
Exciting. I think it's really going to be exciting. It's there's so many things that I'm looking forward to being a part of, being able to guide the community with, and I can't wait. I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sean, for sitting
down.
Excited about the future of Pullman.
Same. Thank you.